Welcome to the Dermatology Interest Group Association podcast, or DIGA podcast, where we talk about everything from how to become a stellar dermatology applicant to interesting topics in dermatology.
From research advice to interviewing tips, you will be prepared to follow the path to become a world-class dermatologist.
Welcome to another episode of the DIGA podcast. Today I have with me Dr. Kamangar, who shares with us about DermGPT, which is a similar platform to ChatGPT. Dr. Kamangar created this so that people can have more answers and easier ways for learning in dermatology. So I hope you enjoy that, and I'll include that in the show notes. She also shares with us a new open access journal that she was a part of creating, and this gives us more opportunities to publish dermatology research, and I'll also include that in the show notes. Finally, she shares with us her podcast that will also be included in the show notes. So I give you Dr. Kamangar, and without further ado, I will see you on the skin side. All right, welcome to another episode of the DIGA podcast. Super grateful to have Dr. Kamangar with us today. Thanks for hopping on. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Mark. I'm Farah Kamangar. I'm a board-certified dermatologist, and I'll go a little bit into my background. I did most of my training at UC Davis in California. That was my undergrad, where I did engineering, then medical school at Davis. I did a research year at UCSF as a medical student, then went into dermatology at UC Davis again. That's a common theme. I've been there for a long time. And then went into practice. I am at the Palo Alto Medical Foundation in Palo Alto, and I've been there pretty much since I left residency. I am now the department chair at PAMF. And then I do lots of other things too. Like today we'll talk about, so through the engineering, I've been involved with health tech for a long time, actually since medical school, which is actually another cool thing medical students can get involved in. So it's been a long time of doing different health tech projects. And then most recently I created DermGPT, which is a dermatology specific AI platform that we'll talk about. Other things that I do, I'm the chair of the San Francisco Derm Society. So we do lots of cool conferences. If you guys ever want to come out to San Francisco, we have a podcast, the Future of Dermatology podcast. And so, yeah, just lots of different things. But in my daily practice, I'm a general dermatologist. I see adults, kids, cosmetics, all of that.
Very cool. Well, there's a lot to unpack, and we've got a lot to offer students today with what we got to cover. So let's dive in with just a quick high level view of DermGPT. Do you want to kind of just tell us about like what it is, how you started it?
Yeah, absolutely. So DermGPT is a learned language model. So meaning if you go in, and it's www.dermgpt.com. So feel free to go in and play around with it. But if you go in and you ask a specific question, it will answer it for you. But it also has over 3,000 dermatology specific publications and information in there. So information that you'll get is a little bit more concrete for the dermatology field. And there's also citations that it gives you, so you can kind of trust it a bit more. People have been using it for all sorts of different things. And the med student level, let's say you're on a rotation, you need to look up something very quickly to help you sound really smart when you're presenting to an attending. That could be one use case. Writing publications, scientific write-ups. There are publications have different rules now that you have to kind of only use it for assistance and not to write the whole thing, obviously. And then also you have to kind of cite if you use any AI sources, but that's a common one. Residents, of course, use it a lot for board studies as well. Clinicians have been using it for all sorts of stuff, like looking up how to write denial letters and information about medication to prescribe. So that's a nutshell of kind of what it does. I should also actually mention, this might be pertinent to medical students. Next month, depending on when this podcast comes out, it could be even before this, our publication DermPub is also going to launch. So that's an online journal that I think would be a really cool place for med students to submit opinion pieces, articles as well.
Absolutely. I think that's a great recommendation. And like you said, it's free. And that's a great way for people to get more opportunities to do research. So thank you so much for sharing that. And we'll put that in the show notes for everyone. And thank you for sharing as well about DermGPT. So it sounds like it's pretty similar to like a chat GPT, but very specific for dermatology. And then, like you said, that's really cool that it has the references. So,
yeah, exactly. Because basically, since last year, since we have the chat GPT technology, it's kind of revolutionized machine learning, because machine learning used to be very slow. You'd have to spend like a long time teaching a computer to do what a human could do, a lot of money, a lot of time. But the new technology has just made it so much faster for us to be able to build these tools. But it's only as good as the data that it has. So if you ask a question of ChatGPT, it could pull from anywhere. I could pull like some random blog from some place. So the accuracy and precision really has to do with like the vector database that it pulls from. For us, the database is all dermatology vetted information. So it's like a super niche product, but it's something that's super helpful for our group of people who really love dermatology.
That's so fascinating. And how do you kind of see AI in general in dermatology? Like, what's the future of that? I know that's kind of vague and esoteric question, but everybody's talking about what AI is going to do to the future.
Absolutely. And you know, it's, I always say like, so AI is not going to take over anyone's jobs, but people who are using AI will probably take all the jobs. So I think AI is here to stay. It's sort of like telehealth when it took off after COVID and people were like, well, is telehealth going to go away or not? And they're like, no, telehealth is staying. AI is the same. The AI is here to stay, which is also great because there are so many kind of little tasks we have to do throughout a clinic day that are becoming more and more complex as our therapies are becoming more complex. We have really good medicine now in dermatology, all the targeted therapies, the cancer therapies. It's actually a really cool time to go into dermatology. I think out of all the generations to do derm, this is the time to do it. But with all that innovation comes a lot of complexity of even just getting the therapies, remembering which therapy you need, what the labs are. There's so much little details that you need help with. And then insurance reimbursements get smaller and smaller. So it's only, you can only hire so much staff to do things for you in the clinical space. So AI just sort of has to happen within the clinic flow. And that's kind of the language learning model AI. Then there's the whole visual AI, meaning you take a picture of a mole and it tells you what it is. So that piece, I think, you know, kind of is going to be slower to develop. There's a lot of companies that are working on it. That won't replace our jobs. You still need the dermatologist, but that I think is a harder, it's a whole other thing. It's like a game of kings, the visual AI. But I think learn language models are really going to make us faster and better. So definitely here to stay.
That's very cool to hear. And this is such a cool experience to be with somebody on the cutting edge of AI, especially in dermatology. It's nice to get that reassurance that dermatology as a field is here to stay. So, and is this platform free or is it subscription-based?
Yep. No, DermGPT is free for board-certified dermatologists, but also residents and our medical students interested and going into dermatology. And that was one of the things that was really important for our products, also including DermPub, the publication. There's so much business around education.
Yes.
As you guys, I'm sure, know, as med students, paying all the bills, and then you submit a paper, you have to pay for that. And this is, so it's always been very important, anything that we do, if it's an educational basis, that it is provided free, because it's knowledge. It's, you know, like knowledge needs to be available, kind of freely available without any kind of boundaries to it.
That is so cool. And that's so rare in this day and age, like you said. And just out of curiosity, so like, how did you come up with, how did you get involved in this? I know you have an engineering background, but I'm just kind of wondering, like, you know, maybe so as a career opportunity for someone thinking about this, who's an engineer in medical school right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I got involved as like a intern at a health tech company when I was a medical student. And I think the best advice I would give for how to get into these things, there is no pre-select, like there's no position out there advertised for medical student at a tech company, right? And even physicians, even as like an attending physician now, there are no positions in health tech companies. They're like, we need an attending physician from dermatology. So a lot of these things, you have to tell the tech companies why they need you, and they do need you. So physician first products, medical student first products are always better, and they succeed in a launch. So any product I've been involved in where the physicians were there as a first step has done really, really well and made the company's money, which is what they care about. So that's the piece that is important. So I think I would just go in with a kind of a humble opinion about things and just say, I'll do whatever is needed. Usually you would maybe go in even as like an intern level, even though you've achieved so much and you're a medical student and you're functioning so highly within the medical track. A lot of times you kind of have to maybe kind of, you know, prove your worth the other way. Of course, if you're an engineer and you can code, that is like that, you don't need to prove anything. It's like, I can show up and I can code for you guys. And I also am a medical student. So that's a winning combination. But most of us, and even me, when it gets to really hardcore coding, I asked some, you know, data science engineers to kind of do some of those pieces. It helps to know the bigger picture, but in our daily lives, you know, we haven't been coding for the last 20 years. So there are people who will just do those nitty gritty things a little bit better. But you can, even if you don't code, you can still get involved in the bigger picture things. And then it also helps, I think, working in both worlds makes you better in the other as well. Like I find now as a department chair, I can solve problems a little bit more kind of analytically that the engineer mind has kind of helped me develop. So we're solving things like even patient access and how many prior auths we can do in a day and how to lower costs and, you know, all of these things. So I think that combination of having the training in both worlds is helpful in both. So it's not like you're giving up one to do the other. But health tech is booming. Of course, if you're in the Bay Area, there's lots of things to do, but really anywhere, yeah, anywhere in the country as well. And so many things are being done remotely now that there's lots of opportunities. A lot of medical centers are starting up fellowships in AI. A lot of medical centers are starting incubators. So if you have an idea, you could pitch to them. I know, like on our podcast, we talked to someone from the Mayo Clinic recently, and he was kind of talking about the Mayo Clinic kind of health incubator. So there's a lot of things popping up that are actually starting to be made a little bit more for us. But I still think it's early days in that you should just approach a company and say, hey, I could do this for you. And they say, okay. And most people are willing. They're like, sure. Let's, and you're a med student. So that's a really, they know you can, you have a proven track record. So they'll probably bring you on. And it's like anything, you just kind of, it's just like a clinical rotation. You show up, they don't know you, you prove your worth. And at the end, they're like, we love you, we can't lose you. You know, so it's like, and it's the same advice actually for a clinical rotation, or if you're starting to work with a health tech company. But I think it's really cool to do. The other thing I would say, eventually, when you are showing your worth, get some shares. That's probably another important thing, which is something I tell attending physicians as well, especially attending physicians. There are some that I work with who did some part-time jobs with some of the companies around us. And I think what's important to note is as you learn more and more and you're offering knowledge, that is, you know, that is like your private information that should be repaid, not only kind of hourly, but in equity. So those are things kind of more down the line, but there are those pieces to kind of that you'll figure out over time. I mean, the first step is just get in, work with the group, see if you even like health tech, but then kind of figure out the pieces of, well, like the physician engineer is actually worth quite a bit. So making sure the business side is also taken care of.
Absolutely. And I mean, this is such a unique opportunity, and there are plenty of engineers out there in medical school. I mean, I know several, I'm not, but yeah, several of my classmates are. And so I think this is great to hear. And for anybody, I think there's a lot of opportunity in tech. So thank you for sharing that. Jumping kind of into more just your experience in dermatology. So before we started recording, you mentioned that you kind of chose dermatology late. What kind of made you choose dermatology? And yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that process of getting into the field as a student who chose dermatology later in your career?
Absolutely. Yep. I think the dermatology journey is so interesting. And it's one that a lot of your medical student colleagues who go to other fields probably won't quite understand because it's so crazy. But basically for me, I was actually applying to ENT as a fourth year. I was like, I love ENT, which I still do. It's a great field. But I was like, I'm definitely applying to this. Mid, like maybe my I think maybe my second rotation, like the fourth year, it was sort of like 8 weeks straight of ENT. I was sort of like, I'm getting kind of tired of doing this. And I think that's one thing I would recommend. Whatever field you're thinking about applying to, do like two back-to-back rotations. Just see if you still like it after the novelty is kind of worn off. But then I went, there was one professor who was a Mohs surgeon. She had dual professorship in dermatology and ENT. And I remember, and I had never really been exposed to dermatology to that level, or like, I didn't know what Mohs surgery was. Is a lot of times in med school, you get kind of limited access to what dermatology actually is. So she kind of walked in like super fabulous, like flowing hair. And I was like, what does she do? I want to do that. What's her job? So it probably sounds like a really not super deep reason, but I literally was just like, that's cool, whatever. And I was like, she's doing surgery, great. And the funny thing is, at that moment in time, I was like, I'm going to be a Mohs surgeon, which kind of just shows how we change our minds all the time and we're not fully differentiated cells. So I went into dermatology really with that mindset, but then really fell in love with the medical dermatology part. I ended up, it was fourth year, so I was like, okay, I didn't decide that I want to do dermatology at age five. So I may be at a disadvantage here. I did choose to just go ahead and do a year of research. So it was kind of not necessarily between my third and fourth year. It was kind of more in the middle of my fourth year, but it ended up being like about a year long. And I went to the UCSF Psoriasis Center. Dr. Ku was my mentor, Dr. John Ku, Dr. Wilson Liao. At the time, the other fellow there was Dr. Tina Bhutani, who is now the head of the UCSF Psoriasis Center, which is really, really cool. That everyone's just had these kind of different trajectories. So it's never too late. Looking back, could I have just applied during fourth year? Maybe, you know, maybe I could have really kind of finagled something with my home program. I did some rotations, maybe written up a couple of papers. The other thing is, at the time, there were four other students from my class applying to dermatology. So I felt very like, oh my gosh, it's not going to happen for me. So I need to do this research here. I'm really glad I did the research here because it really changed the trajectory of how I did things. But the funny thing was that year, those four all actually ended up matching elsewhere to their preference. And they were excellent and they had done research fellowships. I was pretty sure they would, you know, be ahead of me as far as, you know, within our home department. So, you know, the funny thing is after match day, I was like, man, maybe I would have just gotten in if I'd applied. So, you know, I'm really glad I did because it really just changed how much what I do in immunotherapy. So definitely no regrets, but it's an interesting choice that I think some people have to face when they're a little bit late candidates. They're like, do I just go for it? Or do I take more time off? And at that point, I'm sure you've paid a lot for school and it's another year and it's not a light decision to make. There's also sort of this thought that like, if you apply and just go for it and you don't get in, then you are like banned from life and you're a terrible applicant. And there's sort of like this value in the freshness of your applicancy. that's kind of what I had in my mind then. But then over the years, I've seen so many applicants that have applied once, twice, three times, and it kind of doesn't matter. I mean, anything in your head, you make it a bigger thing than it is. But so I don't know, maybe, you know, sometimes you just go for it. But there's lots of different reasons to try to pick, you know, a gap year for sure. So
absolutely. I love that story. And I think it's, you know, not a lot of people will tell you, oh, you can do that late in the game. And so it's always good to hear a success story. And, you know, you work with a lot of residents and students. It sounds like, what do you kind of look for in a student that is rotating with you or just in general, that's kind of looking for a mentor?
Yeah. We have so many great med students that we work with and residents. I think the number one thing is really personality for sure. You know, you just want to make sure that, and I think that's life. People look for others that are similar to them and that you can connect to. And then of course, a second piece is just the commitment piece. I think by the time you're a medical student and you're applying dermatology, the commitment piece is there. So it's rare that I meet someone where I'm like, I don't know if they want to be here. You know, that kind of
yeah.
But you know, you'd be surprised every once in a while. There's, you know, you're sort of like, and then to that person, you really talk to them like, are you happy? Is this what you want to do? Because that, you know, if you've gotten that far and you're not showing that you really want to be there, then that's a whole other story. But of course, you know, it's just the commitment, the initiative. There's a lot of times, and I would say I myself am one of my, you know, weaknesses is I'm not like, oh, go do this and that. Whereas, you know, there's other attendings that I see who are very specific. and they'll give tasks to their med students. I'm always like, let's not stress out. Do you have time for this? You know, I'm the kind of the opposite. So what works really well, I think, with my, and you'll see attendings of different levels. I think with my kind of, if you encounter a person like me, offer up stuff, kind of just look around and see what would help that person and then throw it out there. And like, once you're able to do that and key into that, that person will love you forever. So some attendings are really good about telling you, you know, A to Z, this is what I need you to do, and this is what will be helpful to me. And in that case, that's good too. Just do those things and you'll probably be fine. But I know others, if you're just finding it's like a friendly encounter, still kind of you're building good rapport with them, but still just kind of look for how you can help in clinic or in research, whatever it is. You can come up with your own ideas, pitch your own ideas. I think that's, we love seeing that. And the best ideas have come from our medical students because you're just smarter and younger and your brains work at a faster processing rate than ours. So
I don't know about that, but
no, you do. And that's one of the big advice I would give. I think as a med student, I was just almost like, okay, I'm just going to go in my corner. I'm not doing anything here. You know, I won't bother you. But then looking now, as you know, looking at med students, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're so sharp, so bright, and assets, really assets on any project that I do. So it's very different than how I saw myself then. So I think it's, you know, not to kind of walk in and say, I'm a big deal and I'm an asset, but, you know, having that confidence that you have a lot to offer. So just when you show up, look around and see what things you can kind of help with.
I love it. I love the positivity. And I agree with you. Mentorship is so important. And I think that's one of the reasons that we have this podcast is if you don't have a mentor, hopefully this can be a way that you can find a mentor. Well, before we pop off here, is there anything else that you would like to share with students? We can obviously put all the great references you shared with us in the show notes, but anything else that you would recommend to students?
Yeah, I think, you know, dermatology is really an amazing field. And I think right now it's the best time to be a dermatologist. The future is really, really fun, really exciting. There's so many things coming out. The road is a little bit tricky and it seems really intimidating to get into dermatology, but I have never met anyone who really wanted to do it, not eventually get into dermatology. So I would just sort of enjoy the ride. Don't stress out too much. That's easier said than done because it is a stressful process. And then just kind of go for what you want, because a lot of time is spent kind of thinking about, well, what can I get into? And this and that, but really also think about what you want. So the places that are going to educate you the best, let's say you do want to kind of be in health tech later, maybe you do pick a university that has an incubator or has an AI fellowship, or that it, the equivalent of that in anything else. Let's say you want to be a pediatric dermatologist. Maybe you want to go somewhere with like a really strong pediatric derm program. Cosmetics, that's something that is offered at some programs and not at others. If that's something you want to learn a little bit about, maybe you look at that. There's a little bit of game to that, of course, when you're applying. I think you have to be careful how you ask certain questions of certain programs, of course, because if that's not what, you know, if they're not really strong in peds derm and you're like, I want to be a, you know, peds derm, they might be like, well, maybe they're not going to choose us. So, you know, there's a little bit of the politics that goes on with the communication with the program, but on the back end, you know, do your research and really find things that fit well for you and just kind of let you do what you want to do when you're done with your career. And a lot of that you might not even know yet. And that's okay too. I think for me, it was very undifferentiated. Like in my second year, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. For third year, I really liked surgery. So I was like, cool, I'll do that. And then applied to ENT and then went into derm thinking I'm going to be Mohs surgeon, but then ended up really being very interested in the immunotherapies and doing a lot of clinical research and things like that. So that's okay to do, just kind of let the journey take you and you'll kind of figure out where you should be. So the other piece, I guess I'll add, you know, it's kind of unrelated. Your kids are probably too young to think about it, but I'm a department chair. I have three kids, all of that, you know, husband, PTA meetings, all of it is possible. Don't shy away from leadership. And I think when you take leadership roles, you can actually make your life more what you want it to be versus not being involved. And then you're just going to sort of stuck with the environment that you're given. So I would just say, you know, don't shy away from, because I've heard medical students ask questions like that when they feel comfortable enough to, you know, how much is this going to impact your life and all those other pieces, and it's all possible. So I think you're going into a really great field. If you're having trouble finding any mentors, just reach out to any one of us, because everyone has a really great network of people that we can reach to. And it's amazing what you guys are doing with this podcast of just connecting everyone and creating the resources for people to reach out and do what they want to do.
Thank you so much. Your positivity and energy is unmatched for sure. And I think it's good to hear that down the road. I mean, obviously you're here on this podcast giving your time, and we really appreciate that. But yeah, it's good to hear that you can do so much. And I wish I could like just see a breakdown of your schedule, because it sounds like you just have your hand in so many different pots. I'm like, man,
you do have to be organized. You do have to be organized. And there's a stage in life that you'll realize you just have to hire specific help for very specific tasks. And I don't necessarily mean the home tasks, actually, because a lot of the stuff with the kids, I want to be there. But all the stuff at work, you'll find ways to find time and just allocate what is not physician level work, allocate that to the right person. And that's the key.
That makes a ton of sense. And that sounds like a great team way of going about it. So, well, thank you so much. Is there any references that you would like other than the GPT and the publishing, like social media or anything like that?
Yep. So we have the SF Derm Instagram page where you can find our conferences. If you want to come out, if you're interested in West Coast programs, that might be a good thing to do, because we always have all the faculty from Stanford, UC Davis, UCSF, UC San Diego, UCLA, USC. So it's a smaller conference. Usually we have about 120, 150 people. So it's kind of a good place to really get FaceTime. That might be one good thing to look out to. Those networking, of course, we didn't really talk about that, but network as much as possible. The www.dermgpt.com. And when we launch DermPub, it'll be on there as well. So that's a great place to look that up and see where to submit publications. But yeah, I think you'll kind of see everything on those two locations, our SF Derm website, our DermGPT site.
Great. And I just want to give you a shout out to your podcast. What was the name of the podcast that you helped
with? Yeah. So that's the Future of Dermatology podcast. That's available everywhere podcasts are. So Spotify, Apple, all of, you know, pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's also on YouTube. So that's another cool place to just learn more about dermatology in general. And we do focus a lot on what's coming up in the future. So that's always fun.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the DIGA podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Please send us any questions or comments to derminterestpod@gmail.com.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.